From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 307 years ago, 1707, Scotland voluntarily joined England in the Union of Parliaments, and ever since, it's been at the heart of the United Kingdom, Great Britain. Next week, that could be over. Scottish voters will decide if Scotland should be an independent country. And with real momentum now behind the Yes Scotland campaign, that just may happen. It's part of a global trend toward breakaways. This hour On Point, the breakaway movement in Scotland and beyond. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Could this be the end of the United Kingdom? Is there something changing in the 20th century that says bigger is not necessarily better? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear from the camp that says, yes, let's go independent. We'll hear from the camp that says, no, let's not. Here, speaking to The Guardian, community activist Leslie Riddock said the Scottish people won't get a true social democracy within the UK.
Who are the Scots? Are we just a bunch of braveheart, obsessed, subsidy junkie, English-hating, tartan-clad folk who nonetheless are not that different from everyone else in the UK and just need to learn to grow up and accept the fact? Well, actually, I think we're a nation of people who've been voting for a social democracy for the last 80 years and have finally come to the conclusion we ain't going to get one within the United Kingdom.
Scotland's Sean Connery, famous actor, says, yes, let's get out while we have the chance. Scotland's J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter fame says, no, let's stay in. The advantages are legion. Joining me first today from Edinburgh, Scotland, is Adam Ramsey. He's a campaigner with the Yes Scotland campaign, as in Yes to Independence, co-editor of Open Democracy, author of the e-book 42 Reasons to Support Scottish Independence. Adam Ramsey, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having me.
What's at the heart of this push to get out of the UK? Why?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to what you were saying earlier. There are really important questions in the modern world of size. So the history of the UK is that the two countries, Scotland and England, along with Wales and Northern Ireland, came together so that our elite could better conquer the world. And we were very successful. We won. We murdered our way to the biggest empire in human history. But I think that, you know, that age of empires is over now. And what's happened is that the state we set up to do that has turned round, and it's over the last 40 years or so, it's been asset stripping the British economy. So it's been privatising faster than any other government in the world, pretty much. And the result of that is we have an economy propped up by that asset stripping. And people all across the UK, I think, are pretty fed up with living in the most unequal country in Europe. And the difference in Scotland is that we have a chance to escape that state, that Westminster system set up to conquer the world. And we have an example in the Scottish Parliament, which has been around since 1999 now, of a kind of modern Northern European smaller parliament, which we think, I think on the whole, is seen to just about try its best to represent the wishes of the Scottish people. And so the chance isn't, you know, this isn't about national identity or whatever. This is, and I suppose it's rather like having a kind of mass Occupy movement over 2 years, discussing and debating how we can run a better country in the modern world with powers closer to us. And I think a lot of people are saying, you know what, we can do a better job than that British elite, that, you know, the top of that famous British class system who's been governing us for the last 300 years.
But you're saying not a national identity issue. This is not Braveheart. This is not sword waving. We're Scotsmen, and that's the reason. It's, you're saying it's about the system, what the economic system. The analysis from abroad is widely that Scottish people want a more liberal, stronger social welfare regime than London does.
Well, exactly. And I think that's exactly right. So if you look at the Yes movement, you know, there are Polish for Yes, there are English Scots for Yes, there are French people for Yes, there's Irish for Yes. You know, there's people from all over the world who live in Scotland, and lots of them see the merits of the Yes vote. And yes, you know, I think people in Scotland do want a more social democratic, what you in the States would call a more liberal system. And to be honest, I mean, I think a lot of people in the rest of Britain do too. But the difference is that we have the chance to secure it with the Yes vote next month. And because the thing that's holding everyone back is this kind of outgrown, outmoded British state. I think it's rather like in the States. I think you might, in a sense, see the benefit of this. You've got this ancient old constitution. We've got an even worse version of what you have, which, you know, the House of Lords, at least you elect your senators. And this is our chance to escape that and set up something new in the 21st century.
What do you think the odds are? Everybody poked their heads, lifted their heads straight up after the poll that came out on Sunday saying that the Yes vote, that is, Yes to Independence, was leading the No vote that would keep Scotland with the United Kingdom by a couple of points. Do you feel at this point, with what, 8-9 days to go, that you're in a situation to win independence next week?
I think there's definitely a very good chance. I wouldn't be certain by anything. I think that it's going to come down to whether or not people in Scotland are brave enough to resist the threats that are going to come from Westminster over the next 10 days. You know, the British state has seen its empire collapse over the last 50, 60 years, and it's not going to let go of Scotland lightly. And so, you know, we're going to see lots of threats, I think, coming from Westminster and Downing Street over the next 9 days, and lots of fear-mongering. Yep. But I think a lot of people in Scotland over the last 2 years have learned to look the British state in the eye, and they've seen through their illusion, and they're learning that actually we can run our own affairs perfectly well, and we don't need these powerful people to tell us what to do. We're perfectly capable of running things ourselves.
I mean, you say threats, but it looks like there's all kinds of love notes being sent to you. There's all kinds of Englishmen standing up and talking about how Scotland is at the heart of the whole United Kingdom. You're part and parcel of the whole identity. The UK won't be the UK without you.
Well, indeed, and they seem to have quite mixed messages there. I often do campaign training for people, and I teach them to have a consistent message, and Cameron hasn't learned that lesson, it seems, because on the one hand, he keeps saying, we love you, and on the other hand, he keeps telling us that if we do go, then he'll do everything he can to punish us. And I think, you know, the truth is that this isn't about national identity. I feel quite British, and I'll still feel British. Britain is the name of the island, which includes England, or most of England and Wales and Scotland, on it. And, you know, just as Norwegians are still Scandinavian, just as people in Jamaica can still be from the West Indies, I'll still feel British and I'll still love people south of the border just as much as I do now. But I don't think you need to share a prime minister with someone in order to love them.
Adam Ramsey is a campaigner for Yes Scotland. That is yes as in yes to independence. Please stand by, Adam. They're in Edinburgh with us right now from Lochinhead, or you tell me, Bill, in the Scottish Highlands. Bill Jimison, he's editor of Scott Buzz. It's a website that provides commentary on business and current affairs, former executive editor of The Scotsman. Bill Jimison, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
At this point, what is it, a toss-up, Bill? Could it go either way? Is it that close for next week's vote?
It is that close, Tom. It really is on a knife edge, and it's a very bold person who will make any prediction as to the outcome. The very latest poll suggests it is neck and neck, and that's after the poll that came out on Sunday, which was an amazing alarm clock for the whole campaign. So it's been followed with intense interest, not only in Scotland, but right throughout the UK, because it will have dramatic effects on the politics of the UK as a whole. It would, if it is a yes vote, there are real concerns that the Prime Minister, David Cameron, may have to resign. Big question marks over the future of Ed Miliband and the future of the Labour Party if Scots Labour MPs have to leave Westminster. And also, we've seen on the financial markets the beginnings of what could be a very severe capital flight out of Scotland.
Sterling, the currency, took a beating yesterday. Labour Party has a stronghold in Scotland. If that were taken away, yes, indeed, politics change. How do you describe, Bill Jimison, the motivation of those Scots who say it's time to go, it's time for independence?
Well, we could just go back to the your very interesting introduction. You're talking about the, if you like, the rise of nations across the world. It has not gone away, as you might have thought, in the 20th or 21st century. And I was just looking at some figures from the U.S. government, which calculated, I think, that in 1946, the United States recognized 76 sovereign states. Now, today, that figure is 194, and it does testify to a very burning desire for people who feel that they are a homogenous group, that they go together, that they should have their own government that is responsive to their own needs and desires. And there's no denying that. It's a very powerful impulse anywhere in the world that you go.
Does that impulse grab you, Bill? Are you a yes-to-independence man?
The big issue here is that we're dealing with what is, you know, a sophisticated, very interrelated, very complex, intertwined modern economy. The United Kingdom has is very closely intertwined. Most Scottish companies that export, the bulk of their exports go to the rest of the United Kingdom. I think about 70% of their exports. If you look at the customers of our big financial institutions, 90% of those are out with Scotland and are in the UK or in Europe. So the idea of a breakaway, there's no way that this can come without severe costs and cost implications whether you're in business in the financial sector or whether you're a small firm exporting to the rest of the UK. You would have big problems over the currency, big problems over separating your payroll. There had to be different tax systems and different systems of regulation. And that all adds up to costs for business.
So maybe economic trouble and all kinds of questions here about what Scotland's currency would be. The Yes folk have said, well, we'd stay with the pound, with sterling, but that's not necessarily clear. What about the relationship with the EU? We don't know that at this point. Could they? Would they adopt the euro? Big questions here as Scotland hurtles toward a vote that would take it right out of the United Kingdom. Mayor of London says that would be the end of the United Kingdom. We'll go out here with cap in hand by the Proclaimers, longtime favorite among the Scottish nationalist movement, pro-independence supporters, pushing this song in a social media campaign ahead of next week's vote to send it to the top of the Scottish singles chart. Adam Ramsey says, yes, let's leave the United Kingdom. He's with us from Edinburgh. Bill Jimison is with Scott Buzz. Not so sure. With us from the Scottish Highlands. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Scotland voting next week on whether or not to break away from the UK, Britain. And the breakaway movement gaining steam in many parts of the world these days. Of course, in Scotland's case, many Americans think first of the big speech in the big movie Braveheart. William Wallace, played by Mel Gibson, rallies his Scottish troops. This is very, very loosely historical here, to go to battle with the English.
Dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
Ah, it's hard to compete with Mel Gibson, but here's the head of the pro-UK Better Together campaign in Scotland, Alistair Darling, saying that the outcome of the referendum will have big consequences, and if it's independence, not good consequences for Scotland's families.
This is a referendum on whether or not we stay in the United Kingdom. It's not a referendum on what, you know, further powers that we're going to get. We're going to get them anyway if we stay in the United Kingdom. The big question in front of people's mind just now is, what impact would taking Scotland out of the UK have on families in terms of the cost of living, in terms of funding of the NHS? These are things that actually matter.
And the Better Together campaign, No to Independence campaign, says Scotland will be better off within the United Kingdom. Adam Ramsey is with us, a campaigner for Yes Scotland, as in Yes to Independence, author of 42 Reasons to Support Scottish Independence, an e-book out. Bill Jimison is with us, editor of Scott Buzz, former executive editor of The Scotsman, joins us from the Scottish Highlands. Adam's in Edinburgh. We've got a caller from Fife, Scotland, with us right now, Jean. Thanks for calling, Jean. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
What's your view?
I am emphatically for yes. And in an effort to help my American family understand what was happening, I was able to write a blog for the Huffington Post basically saying, it's about democracy, stupid, and outlining both the historical argument and the contemporary motivations for why this is happening.
Give us the contemporary piece, Jean. We kind of know the history. It's bloody, but then it also formed a bond. But right now, what's the advantage?
The single most important element of it is representative democracy and control over taxes, the same issues that motivated the American Revolution. Within the Scottish Parliament, now brace yourself, Americans, because get your head around this. The Scottish nation is, all of our taxes are collected, sent down to Westminster, where they take a chunk and give us a lump sum back every year, minus they're taking. We live on a balanced budget for that. We don't have the power to borrow, to invest in our infrastructure, to set alcohol legislation, to vary property tax, nothing that the smallest town or county within a U.S. state would see as a second nature ability to manage its own resources.
Gene, where does this end? If Scotland breaks away, does every little chunk break away from everywhere? Or does every little town want to have its own independence?
I don't think that several of the people in the unionist side like to beat the yes side with the notion that, of course, Shetland and Orkney will break away. And the support for yes has been more lukewarm over this kind of 35-year period for this. But I think that this is step one, and you're looking at an 18-month negotiation period. Next week is not Independence Day. Next week is a vote. Independence Day comes 18 months after this. Mm-hmm. I think it's March 26, 2016 is the date set. That would be the Scottish Independence Day. Wales is following very, very closely. And in the Commonwealth Games, I think we just saw quite an impressive parade of small nations that have parted with Westminster rule and seem to be doing okay.
Gene, in Fife, Scotland, we've got it loud and clear, and I appreciate your call. Bill Jamieson in the Scottish Highlands. If it's a yes, what are the issues that are raised, Bill, around the currency, around Scottish debt, around the oil wealth in the seas north of what we now call Great Britain? Who does it belong to? How's that work out, Bill?
Well, that was a very eloquent case for voting yes, I have to say. And many, many Scots would absolutely go along with what was said there. But you did notice there are a number, there's a whole number of grievances that are wrapped up into one in the independence campaign. You look at some of the threads of them. There's certainly a big concern here about the rise of income inequality. It has got much wider over the past 10 years. There's also a lot of frustration about the government's program of austerity. We do have a huge debt pile, which is keeps on rising. I think it's about £1.35 trillion and rising. So the government has to bear down on this because these debt interest costs keep on going up. And there's also this issue, so eloquently put, about the desire for more democracy, more control over our affairs.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not lose sight of the fact we do have a very vibrant Scottish Parliament. The Scottish Parliament has full control over the health service in Scotland, full control over education, full control over, social administration, full control over justice matters. We have a great deal of devolution already. There is more on the way, and it's difficult really to see what it is exactly that the Yes campaign wants to see by way of independence, if it also wants to share the currency with the rest of the UK, because that would come with lots of strings and controls attached.
Yeah, Adam Ramsey, we've seen in Europe what happens when you share a currency but you don't have power to direct how that currency is deployed. Spain, for example, a lot of southern European countries have suffered a lot in the EU setup. What about the problems that could bring for Scotland?
Well, on the currency question, I mean, I think that in the long term, Scotland should and will move towards having its own independent currency, although that's not currently what's being proposed by the Scottish government. I'm pretty sure that after a yes vote, we'll gradually move towards that. But the other thing that's important to understand is that the currency union that is the euro between many, many more countries is a union between economies which are hugely divergent. You know, the very, very rich German and Danish economies being attached to the much, much poorer Greek economy, for example, I think was certainly foolish, just as, I think causes big problems in the States that you have to lump Tennessee in with New York. I think the setting interest rates for both of those places causes problems that I've seen when I've visited. But I think that, you know, having a currency union across a much smaller and more similarly wealthy island like Britain isn't going to cause those same levels of problems. So as I say, I mean, I do think we should and will move towards an independent currency, because I think that you look at the richest countries in the world, and many of them are small European countries with their own currency, and I don't think that's a coincidence. But I think in the short term, having a currency union isn't going to be anything like attaching Greece and Germany together. It's much more like having a currency union between two relatively similar US states.
What about oil revenues? What about UK debt? Is it clear what portion of that Scotland would take on? Is it clear what portion of the oil wealth Scotland would get?
I think it is, and I think it shouldn't matter too much. So, I mean, there's international law defining certainly questions of oil wealth, and almost all of the oil in the North Sea will be Scotland's. I mean, my attitude personally is that we shouldn't be burning most of the filthy stuff. If we look at what climate scientists tell us are going to happen if we do, then I think we should be avoiding that. Scotland without oil is as wealthy as the rest of the UK put together. And, you know, anything we burn there, I think, you know, it's a mistake for the climate. But if we do, then the money we get is on top of what we have otherwise, you know, it is on top of the wealth of the UK economy as a whole. So that's not a huge issue there. And I mean, just come back to one of the things Bill said earlier. Bill said that it's a huge risk because 70% of our exports are to the rest of the UK. And that gets to the core, I think, of how the UK government has consistently, depending whatever party it is, over the last half century, mismanaged the British economy. You know, the idea that we're dependent on, you know, for 70% of our exports on the rest of the UK. You know, Norway isn't dependent for 70% of exports on Sweden, and neither is Denmark. You know, that's totally abnormal, and that's because of a total failure of the British government to have a sensible economic management, have a sensible industrial policy in Scotland or even across the whole of the UK. In fact, the UK as a whole has had trade deficits for decades now. And so, you know, I think what we're really seeing is this British state, which is built around an elitist class system in the UK, has totally mismanaged the post-imperial economy for 40 years now. And I think a lot of people in Scotland are saying we want to escape into the modern world, we want to join the network of nations. You know, you asked before about other people breaking away. I think in the modern age, having lots of smaller states where people can hold power to account more easily, and smaller states which are better able to manage their own economies for their own particular circumstances, would be a very good thing. I don't think that's a threat. I think that's a good vision for the future, is lots of, you know, smaller governments, smaller countries, not big bullies on the world stage fighting against each other, but a network of nations like a group of ships, like a flotilla, who can set their own direction, but huddle together in storms.
No, I get it. And yet there's a lot of sentiment that goes the other way. I mean, you've got the colourful mayor of London, Boris Johnson, just out of his mind with opposition to this, saying it'll be catastrophic. Britain, British, Britishness, he writes, these are precious terms. They stand for something wonderful across the world. Freedom, democracy, independent judiciary, sense of humour, reasonableness, you name it. These weren't just the result of exertions of the English and Welsh, and they weren't just Scottish achievements. Johnson needed Boswell and vice versa. I mean, he said you can't have the United Kingdom without Scotland, and you can't have the accomplishments of the United Kingdom over these last many centuries without the Scottish.
Sure. And so I think one of the interesting phenomena in this debate has been that the No campaign do seem often to be obsessed with questions of identity and flags and isn't Britain wonderful and this kind of pompous imperial sense of Britishness and the royal family and blah and so on. And in fact, this has to be a set of practical questions. So, for example, you know, why is it that smaller countries in Europe tend to be richer than bigger countries? Why is it that Britain is the most unequal country in Europe and on a trajectory to become even less equal than the USA? Why is it that Britain has got such a terrible trade deficit, not just under this government, but for 40 years now? You know, what is it that's gone wrong? And so, you know, I think we need to be asking these practical questions. You know, can we do better if we bring power closer to people and have it more accountable? Not about questions of identity, because when Boris Johnson talks about the great achievements of Britain, you know, most of those achievements are about going to other countries and murdering people. So Britain had conquered more of the world than any other country in human history has. 90% of countries on Earth have been invaded by the British Empire.
The Scottish had a pretty central role in that project, however you want to describe it.
Well, exactly. No, I mean, Britain, including Scotland, exactly as Boris Johnson said, you know, our union was brought together so we could go around the world murdering people better. And I think it's time to move on from that age and to join the modern world, to become a member of the network of nations and not join together in this imperious club so we can go bombing other countries.
More callers for you and for Bill Jimison. Keith in Austin, Texas. Keith, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
A couple of things. One, it's funny, the no vote people are using a lot of the same rhetoric that was used in Congress in Philadelphia in 1776 against independence there. But
yes.
I see a lot of parallels here in the United States today with Scotland. A lot of there are independent republics here in the U.S., like the Republic of Vermont, the Republic of Texas, that were independent countries before states. And I see new secessionist movements in them. I see a resurgence of secessionism within states like Western Massachusetts or Northern California.
Hey, I don't know, Keith, but what do you think of it? If we were to go in that direction, Adams celebrating that dynamic, would you celebrate it in this state? We had a civil war to hold the thing together.
Well, we did. And I think it's easy for people to feel unity when things are going well. But when a group that has a shared cultural identity finds itself on the short end of a stick, they start looking for their own stick. And if we want to stay together as bigger countries, we need to figure out a way for our economies to benefit the larger body and for our political power to be more equally shared. And if we can't do that, then we are better off as smaller nations.
There's a call from Texas, which would not be a small nation in itself. Keith, I appreciate your call. Adam, Bill, stand by. I want to welcome one more voice into our conversation from Brasilia in Brazil. Peter Vail joins us. He's professor of humanities, actually from South Africa at the University of Johannesburg. Peter Vail, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom. I'm sorry I've missed half of the conversation, but I'm looking forward to contributing if I can.
It's been very interesting. We're looking at Scotland, but also everybody's well aware that around the world we seem to see more of these breakaway movements gaining momentum. Is that true? And if so, why?
Well, I think, it's basically true. I think that politics, international politics, as we've known it, is in the midst of a deep structural change, a paradigm shift, if you prefer. Mm. I think that your last caller did put his finger on the button. I think people are alienated from politics for different sets of reasons, and much more alienated from politicians. Part of that is, I think, cuts in public expenditure have run their course. And part of that is that the political elite seems to be in bed with the business.
But Scotland or any other breakaway unit will still have politicians on the other side of independence. They'll have its own elites. Oh, I think Peter Vail's breaking up on me there. Bill Jamieson, jump in here. I mean, Scotland won't be free of politics just because it's free of London.
You bet it won't. We have a very feisty, is the word we use, very feisty political system here, and a very animated Scottish Parliament. There's no doubt about that. And I think one of the points, let me just take out one of the points that, yes, Adam was making, and I'm sure he would agree with this, that there are limits to the degree of independence and separation that the Yes campaign is rooting for. If you make a list of the things that it said it will retain, it wants to retain the monarchy and the Queen as head of the Scottish state. It wants to retain the pound sterling as its currency. It certainly wants to retain the social union, because there is a terrific amount of social intermeshing between Scotland, England and the rest of the UK that people don't want to break up at all. It wants to keep the oil, that's for sure. It wants to keep all the green energy investment that's been made by, you know, companies in the rest of the UK in Scotland. It wants to retain that. It wants to retain membership of the European Union, which may in fact be the biggest threat to the independence of a separate Scotland. So if you look at all these things, can you really say that this is going to be real independence? There's a lot of interdependence that is recognized in the Yes campaign case. It's one weak point. It's Achilles' heel in this, is it cannot tell us which currency that an independent Scotland is going to have. And that worries many people, from people in dependent on social security benefits right through to pensioners and people in employment. What currency are we going to be paid in?
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking about Scotland voting next week on whether or not to break away from the UK, Britain, and the breakaway movement appearing to gain steam in many corners of the world these days. Adam Ramsey is with us from Edinburgh in Scotland, campaigner for Yes Scotland, as in Yes to Independence. Bill Jimison is with us from the Scottish Highlands, editor of Scott Buzz, watching all of this. Peter Vail is with us from Brasilia, Brazil, professor of humanities in South Africa at the University of Johannesburg. Peter Vail, I think we've got your line back up, and we'll come to you in just a moment. Robert in Lexington, Massachusetts. Robert, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
So I'm a Scottish person living in Lexington, been here for about 20 years, and I don't have a question. I have more want to voice my concerns. I have an American passport, I'm a U.S. citizen, and also a European passport,
okay,
as do my four children. And I also have an office in Europe. So right now I'm very concerned with the lack of answers that I'm getting from the politicians who are asking for my yes vote. I just recently came back from Scotland and posed the question of, will I lose? Obviously, we'll be out of the EU. Will I lose my European passport? And would I get a Scottish passport? And would I be able to live? Or would I have to travel on my American passport? That's one topic of concern for me. The second is, would be the currency. I mean, are they going to convert to a euro, as we previous callers discussed? There's just no answers out there for people living overseas from Scotland, like myself.
Robert, let me put you straight to Bill Jimison. Stick with us here. Bill, begin if you can to answer those questions. Will Scotland, an independent, if it's a yes vote, be out of the EU?
Aha. Well, that's one of the many many imponderables about this whole debate. There is no clear position here as to an independent Scotland's relationship with the European Union. Now, the Yes campaign certainly wants to retain our membership, but there are legal and constitutional processes to work through, and the status of an independent Scotland initially is very, very unclear. There have been conflicting legal advice on this as to whether Scotland would go to the back of the queue as an applicant for EU membership, or whether it would be treated as, you know, being within the EU as it is currently with the UK. Whatever avenue we go along this route, there's no doubt it's going to take quite a long time within Brussels to sort out the constitutional position. This has been watched closely, as you will know, in Spain, where the Spanish government would be very anxious to avoid a precedent being set for the Basque separatist movement. So it's full of ramifications and complexities. It is a very difficult issue, and it creates uncertainty, and uncertainty is a great enemy of business confidence.
And what about the currency? What about the currency, Bill? Can London just cut an independent Scotland off from the sterling? Can they say, no, you can't use it? Or would they be inclined to allow Scotland to use it, if that's the right verb?
Well, the position at the moment is that the three main Westminster parties, that's the Conservative Party, the Liberal Democrats, and Labour, have all three of them said that they would not go into negotiations on a formal currency union with an independent Scotland. And there's lots and lots of reasons for that. They look across to the Eurozone and look at the very, very stricken and turbulent time that the euro has had, particularly during this recession. It's still struggling. Really, really serious austerity programs in the southern Med economies. We don't want to see that, certainly, in the UK. So that's one big issue as to how it would work out. The second one is that there would have to be such a degree of oversight by the UK Treasury on a Scottish government's borrowing and its spending that to call it independence would be an insult to the word independence. But that would be a fact of life if you go into a currency union. And the third issue here is that, you know, while the case for the Yes campaign says it's a sovereign will of the Scottish people to be independent, and, you know, therefore we have a right to keep on sharing the pound, don't forget there's also a sovereign will on the other side, and that's the sovereign will of the people of the rest of the UK, who would have to have a say on whether they would agree to a currency union with what would be an independent foreign country. So it's very, very difficult for Westminster politicians to say, even if they were prepared to open up on negotiations with an independent Scottish government, whether the people in the rest of the UK would agree to take on the risks of being lender of last resort to what would be a foreign country.
Let me ask our caller, Robert, with all of that, Robert, in Lexington, Massachusetts, with your Scottish origins and right to vote, how do you expect to vote next week, or if you are voting?
No, absolutely not. I think for a Scotsman to agree with Boris Johnson, who's the Mayor of London, it's quite unusual, but I would definitely agree with what he says. I think Britain would go downhill, and united together, definitely not.
Can I just reassure Robert there?
Yes, Adam. In Edinburgh, how do you turn that vote around?
Well, I mean, he had specific questions. And there, I mean, Robert, there are answers to those questions in the Scottish Government's white paper, which I'd encourage you to read. So the answer is, will you get to keep your Scottish passport? Yes, you've lived in Scotland for more than 5 years, or if you were born here, then you'll have a right to a Scottish passport. So yes, you certainly will
have one.
What about
an EU passport?
Well, and the EU question, I mean, firstly, there's no precedent to revoking EU citizenship from anyone, and there's no desire to do so in Europe. So certainly there'll be some complexities around negotiations, but I think that Bill's given you certainly the scariest version of the story that you might hear there. And what the new president of the European Commission said is that Scotland is an exceptional case. It won't have to go to the back of the queue. It'll be treated differently because it's already in the EU. It complies with all the laws. And, you know, remember when East Germany joined Germany and became part of the EU, it was expedited into Europe very quickly, and it didn't follow any of the requirements, and Scotland already does. So, and you know, it's not in anyone's interests for Scotland to leave the EU. You know, for example, Bill mentioned Spain, but Scotland controls a huge portion of the North Atlantic and therefore fishing waters, and Spanish fishermen currently have access to those waters because Scotland's in the EU. Were Spain to veto Scotland coming back in, they'd have to explain to their fishing fleets why they could no longer fish the North Atlantic. Scotland has got more top 200 universities in the world than any other country per capita, and there's students from all over the EU currently studying for free at our university. They'd have to explain to the parents of those universities why they'd suddenly have to pay hundreds of thousands.
You're weighing your leverage as an independent actor there. Okay.
So, well, and the point is, you know, Europe is an expansionist project. No one in the EU wants to have Scotland leave. Scotland, one of the wealthiest countries in Europe, leave. So, you know, this is about real politics, and there's no desire from anywhere in Europe. There's a desire from Spain to scare people, but if Scotland loves vote yes, there's no desire from anywhere in the world for Scotland to actually leave the EU and have the Scottish market no longer part of the common market. So Scotland won't be thrown out of the EU. Yes, there'll be complex negotiations, and yes, it might take some time, but it will be fine. And I think a lot of these stories, you know, I think Bill has certainly got his lines from Better Together, and these are certainly what we've been hearing a lot across Scotland. But I think people don't need to be nearly as worried. You know, 30% of people on Earth, 30% literally, live in a country which used to be run from London and no longer is. And those countries have, you know, they've got various levels of success, but none of them has faced the kind of horror that we sometimes have painted by the No campaign. You know,
Adam Ramsey, caller Robert. Good luck with your vote there. Peter Bale, let me come back to you in Brazil. I think our line's better now. I mean, we're looking around. We see this republic at Spurska, you know, in Bosnia-Herzegovina, looking to break away. The Catalonia and the Basque, of course. We've got Ukraine very much in the news. For that matter, we've got the so-called Islamic State. Surely it's not just a disappointment with politicians driving all this. There must be other dynamics, Peter, in this century that make it seem attractive or more viable to break away into smaller units, different units.
I'm sorry, Tom, I lost most of that. This line is extremely bad.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I wondered if you could hear me. Can I just make one little intercession?
Yes.
Which comes from somewhere else. I mean, this conversation about Scotland, and I'm not an expert on this. I follow it at a great distance. My mother was a Scot. When I hear bagpipes, my heart begins to go.
All right.
But I mean, this is a conversation really which can be reduced to money versus memory. The money conversation, and the, you know, that's linked to the passport thing, is a technical form of politics that's going on. And this,
oh dear,
probably from. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're breaking up on us again, Peter, and I'm sorry for it. Well, we'll have to come back and try another time to hear you out on the global trend. I think the line is just not going to cooperate with us today. We're so grateful that you were ready to join us, and we'll try with a better line another time. Abilene, Texas, Singh, you're on the air. Singh, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I have a concern regarding this current independent movement in Scotland from economic perspective. If the Scottish people can pick a leaf, just what happened to Spain, they are having the same issue what these people want to embark upon. They want to have a shared common currency with their political independence. That is a perfect recipe for disaster. In economic jargon, if you want to have a common currency to successful, you must have a common government. You cannot choose either or. You must have a common government, common currency for it to be successful. They cannot seek political independence and either share pound sterling or a euro. That is bound to fail.
Bound to fail because they won't have control over how their own currency is deployed and used.
Because it's like this, right? For any common currency, take for our U.S., for example, we have a federal system, we have a fiscal responsibility. If you take U.S., we can print as much money as we want. We can control. We have fiscal responsibility and banking integration. Both have to go hand in hand. You cannot have just fiscal responsibility independent with banking control out of your hand. They must be both under the same umbrella for the institution to function and to be successful in a common currency area. Otherwise, what's happening in Spain, what happened to Greece, these are very latest examples how the currencies collapse. Because there is no fiscal common ground there. They don't share the same fiscal government. They don't have the same fiscal policies.
Singh, you've got a clear economist view on it, and I appreciate your call. We're looking at Scotland's push for independence, the vote next week. Bill Jimison, we've heard economists in London and around the world saying something similar, that Scotland does take on a fair degree of risk in trying to straddle here independence, but not an independent currency. Could Scotland just go on, take the next step and have an independent currency?
Well, there is a step in between, Tom, and that is what we call sterlingization or dollarization. In other words, that the Scottish currency is linked informally to the UK pound sterling, but there is no central bank facility, there's no lender of last resort facility. It's a bit like the relationship between Panama and the United States. There's the Panamanian dollar is linked to the US dollar, but the downside of that is that I think Panama has to put up with very high interest rates to attract money in. And the problem here is that the banks that are registered in Scotland currently, if there is no central bank standing behind them with lots of reserves, the real concern is that the Scottish registered banks will move south to the rest of the UK to get that cover, to get that protection of lender of last resort. And if they do not move, there's a fair bet that the customers will move by withdrawing their funds. That's a real, real risk. So there is this halfway house of, as I say, sterlingization. Not a very stable one. It would be, I think, a temporary arrangement. But it's very interesting. There's quite a number of very reputable economists within the Yes campaign who are saying that actually the best option is to have a separate currency for Scotland. And there's quite a number of independent economists who say, yes, that is the way for Scotland to go.
Elizabeth in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Elizabeth, thank you for calling. You're on.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Very interesting conversation with many complexities to it.
Yes.
I actually have a blog called Slingshot to honor those who have overcome odds from tenacity, true grit, and innate talent. And I'm also on the Good Judgment Project. I'm competing in the Good Judgment Project this year. And my question to predict for the Good Judgment Project, which has outperformed the CIA analysts for 3 years now on their predictions, is will Scotland vote yes?
And what's your answer, Elizabeth? What's your prediction?
Right now, so I've said yes from the beginning because I went to St. Andrews University for a year.
Even before the polls were saying yes, and you're sticking with it, I presume.
I said yes from the very beginning, and that started at, like, I think 55% probability.
Elizabeth, our time is short before the break, and I'm sorry to have to let you go, but you're saying yes. Adam Ramsey's promoting yes. Bill Jimison, if Scotland does vote yes, is it the end of the United Kingdom? Will they still call it the UK?
Well, they'll have to call it by some other name. The shorthand currently is rather messy-looking, R-U-K, small lowercase letter R and then U-K. Not very pretty to look at, I have to say. They'll have to come up, I think, with another name. But more seriously, it puts a real bombshell under Westminster and certainly under the, if you like, the credibility of the Prime Minister, David Cameron, the big, big issue as to whether he will survive a yes vote. He will be seen as the Prime Minister who, you know, let the union break up. there's no comfort for the Labour leader, Mr. Ed Miliband, because Labour is very dependent on Scottish Labour MPs at Westminster for his majority, if he gets one in May of next year. So it may be just a temporary Labour government, maybe just for a year or 15 months before the negotiations are completed. And all the time, you have this problem of questioning of the credibility of Sterling, Sterling falling in the financial markets, a financial drain from Scotland. It's very difficult to cauterize this unless you have, you know, a strong political leadership. And that we will certainly not have post yes vote in September the 18th.
The whole world watching next week as Scotland goes to the polls to decide really something historic on its independence or otherwise from Great Britain. Bill Jemison with Scott Buzz, thank you for joining us today from the Scottish Highlands. Adam Ramsey with Yes Scotland, joining us from Edinburgh. Listeners all over, thank you for your calls today. We'll go out with Flower of Scotland, kind of unofficial national anthem of Scotland. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. So dearly held, oh, Flower of Scotland.